Welcome to Land a Job You Love podcast. I'm your host and career coach, Kajal Bansal. If you're someone who's looking for that sense of fulfillment in their career, you've come to the right place because in this podcast, I'll be speaking with inspirational industry leaders who have followed their true interests and instincts to land work they love and give you advice on how you can do the same. Yeah, if you could share with the audience who you are and what you do.
Sure. I'm Rochelle Hariri. I'm an award-winning marketing consultant. I am a startup advisor, and I'm the founder of She's Interesting, which is a mission-driven media network and company that essentially supports women in entrepreneurship. So our content is curated for women who are 30 and above, because we are traditionally a demographic and group that is ignored by the media. And so with She's Interesting, what we're doing is highlighting and sharing the stories of successful women entrepreneurs, investors, and change makers so that we can inspire more women to feel comfortable taking on the title of entrepreneur.
Oh, okay. First of all, amazing intro. clearly you're great at what you do, but also like, I mean, we'll get into this, but She's Interesting podcast. Like, I highly recommend anyone who hasn't listened to it. You have really incredible guests, like 7-8-figure business women, on that really just like share their story. And it's like, what I love about it is like, there's no gatekeeping vibe of just being like, take all the resources, take all the tips. Like, and I love that that's like really become the ethos of the brand.
Absolutely. A lot of it is, yeah, a lot of it is centered around the idea of abundance. And if we look at just society and how things have been built over centuries, it's almost like we make women feel like we have to fight with each other to get success. And that's so not true. If we look at all the billionaire men in the world and all the companies run by men, there is no such thing as lack. There's clearly abundance all around us and we can all achieve it. But we just need to support each other and give each other the information. And I think once you get into a state of just recognizing that what's meant for you is going to come to you, you feel abundance because you know if you get any rejection or something goes wrong, it wasn't meant for you. And that's fine. And you can be detached from outcomes and continue to share and be open and vocal with what you're doing without the fear of, well, if I tell this person, then they're going to take my idea. And it's like, that's not how it works. There's room for everyone.
Tell me about that mindset. Did you always have that mindset or did you have to develop that mindset?
I think partially a lot of it was I had to work on it and work on myself. I think when I was younger, I didn't even think about these things, right? They weren't thoughts that I had. I was always a deep thinker growing up and I started reading self-help books from when I was 18 or 17, like before I even went to university. So, and I grew up watching Oprah. So I'd always been interested in deeper topics and thinking about the world. And by nature, I'm an Aquarian. And so I'm always thinking about the bigger picture things while people are concerned with day-to-day issues they have. I'm thinking about capitalism. I'm thinking about the patriarchy. I'm thinking about the history of how much women have overcome and women in business. Like my brain is somewhere else, right? I'm not thinking about what's in front of me most of the time. So I think when it comes to having an abundance mindset, it's something that I learned about. I didn't know what an abundance mindset was. I also didn't even know what like having a lack of abundance meant either. I just knew that I was living and working hard and doing my best, but it was through, you know, reading these self-help books and going on YouTube and researching mindset and doing all of these things. That's when I started to realize, oh, I now get what an abundance mindset is, which basically just means there is an infinite amount of possibility out there in the world, and you have the ability to create abundance for yourself if you're open to it and your vibration is high.
Okay. This is like so not the plan for this conversation, but I'm so happy we're talking about this because I feel like we're so aligned. And I honestly don't know that many people. There's not a lot of people I can talk to who are like, I've been like religiously listening to Dr. Joe Dispenza. So like if I'm like cooking, cleaning like that, and it has completely transformed the way that I think and feel. Yeah. And like, it's exactly what you're saying is like, I used to be somebody who like I have so much anxiety and I would hold on so tight to outcomes and I would feel so, so devastated if something didn't work out. And lately it's just been like, what is meant for me? Exactly what you said, like what's meant for me will be. And so it might not be the exact route that I think it should be or what I think it will be, but if it's meant to be, it will just be. And actually, comes up a lot in podcasting, and maybe you've experienced this too, but sometimes you'll book like a phenomenal guest Mm-hmm. And then it doesn't, like, you know, they cancel it. Like, you get it so far as to, like, have it in the schedule. And yeah. Of course, like, people are giving you their time for free. Like, it's not, you know, it's like, yeah. If something else is prioritized, like, it totally makes sense. But it can be devastating. And I think I really have learned to, like, let it go and just leave it up to the universe. And kind of, like, if it falls back into place, great. And maybe it'll come at a time that's even better, you know? Yeah. So getting there has been, like, and it's nice to hear you say that you had to learn and, like, get there, because that was, like, for me as well, it was like a process that I'm going through and learning. Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's not something that you're taught, right? Like, no one's parents, as far as I know, yeah. Not in my generation anyway, are teaching you about abundance, right? I come from an immigrant family that left Iran and came to Canada. So abundance was not something that my mom was thinking about. My dad yes. passed away when I just finished kindergarten. And my mom raised me and my sisters. Her mindset wasn't on abundance. Her mindset was on, how do I make sure my girls have a good future? We left Iran and brought them to Canada because we wanted them to have, like, equal rights. We wanted my kids to be able to live in among freedom, because, you know, like, there was a revolution that happened in Iran and it completely flipped the country upside down. So where I came from, and where a lot of friends that I come from, these third culture kids that are used to living in different countries, we don't, you know, it's not, abundance is not something that we were taught, especially if you come from parents who are immigrants. You're taught you need to survive and you need to do your best and you need to be grateful. So it's a different mindset shift, where you're still grateful for everything you have, but you believe that you can achieve more and that there's opportunity for you to do more, that you don't have to settle for what's in front of you today.
I really love that. And I think that's, like, such an important message and, like, really great takeaway for the episode. Okay, so before we get into the rest of the episode, I wanted to share that this episode is supported by Melanie Auld Jewelry. When I first moved to Toronto, I noticed so many of the women here have such a classic, elegant look that's also really versatile. So whether they were going to work, spending a night out with friends, or walking down the streets of downtown, their jewelry always works as a perfect complement to their outfit. Whenever I would ask my friends and colleagues where they would get these beautiful pieces, consistently, they would direct me to Melanie Auld Jewelry. Established in 2013, Melanie Auld crafts timeless, versatile, custom, and conversation-starting pieces that are meant to be layered and styled to evolve over time. Personalization is at the heart of MAJ, and customers have the option to create a signature piece that represents their story with Melanie Auld's elevated styles. So, if you're like me and you've been looking for classic pieces to complete your outfits, I highly recommend checking out their website at melanieauld.com. They have boutiques in both Vancouver and Toronto, as well as an online store available Canada and US-wide at melanieauld.com. And they have very generously offered an exclusive 15% off discount to Land a Job You Love listeners. You can use code SPARK15 for 15% off online or in-store at the Vancouver and Toronto boutiques. Have you read Letting Go by David Hawkins?
No, I haven't.
I'm reading it now. And it's a lot about this. So I just thought maybe, can I ask, what has been, like, one book that you feel has been, like, pivotal to kind of shifting your mindset to this?
Ooh, I don't think that there has been one. I am just consuming books nonstop. I have an Audible subscription. So when I'm cooking, when I'm cleaning, when I'm driving, I don't live in the city. So my long commutes, I'm constantly listening to different innovative thinkers. I'm listening to business books and self-help books. Unfortunately, I'm not really big into fiction right now. Maybe, you know, like, over the summer, I might pick up a fiction book, but I'm always thinking about, how can I learn more? How can I absorb more information? So I think for me, it's been a series of different books that have helped me over time. And sometimes I refer back to those books when I need them. So there's a specific book, I'm trying to think of the name right now, but it has the word fuck in it. It's like, oh, yes. When you have no fucks to give, what was that book called? Oh, it's going to drive me crazy. But that was, like, a book that I read when I was going through a really difficult time in my career. And I just felt like there's more out there for me. And why do I give so many fucks? Like, I should care less. And there's only so much energy that I have. So, like, that was a book that I read and I picked up. Or when I was 17, the first self-help book that I ever read was a book called Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting. And it doesn't talk about manifestation, but it talks about giving yourself these excited feelings, because when you feel things, that's actually when you manifest more than just thinking about, oh, I want to have this successful life or whatever it is that you want. It's when you get these inner butterflies that you're so excited about what you're working on. That's when you know you're going in the right direction. And so for me, I'd say there hasn't been one book, unfortunately, that I read and was like, wow, this is changing my life. It's taking nuggets and pieces from every single book that I've read and from interesting people I've met and coaches and mentors that I've been able to put together my own toolbox of how I perceive the world and what I want to do with my life. So I know it's for anyone who's listening, this isn't like read this book, it's going to change your life. It's take a series of steps. And over time you'll look back and be like, wow, I really went up this whole staircase and I didn't even expect to be here.
Yeah, actually that reminds me, like you did this, I don't know if you do it quarterly or monthly, but I think at the beginning of April, you did this like goal setting thing. Yes. And I really loved it because it was like, I have this thing where like, I'll have like this endless list and I kind of always feel like sad because it's never all complete. And I really took away from what you posted that it's like great to have like maybe two or three things to focus on. And that way you feel like a sense of accomplishment if you do get those done, like just prioritizing a smaller number of bigger impact things so that you feel a sense of accomplishment.
I always think, and over time, like when I was younger, I used to love to-do lists and crossing the to-do list off. And I was like, oh, I feel so accomplished. I did 10 things today or whatever.
Yeah.
As I've grown in my career and also like, as I think about all of the things that I really have to do, if you look at your to-do list, like laundry, it never ends, right? It's a cycle. It never ends. On a daily basis, you're just going to have more stuff that's on your list and you're going to have to keep checking things off. And that in itself can be demotivating when you're like, damn, like I just keep getting more and more stuff put on me and I'm tired. So the way that I view it is on a monthly basis, just think about what's like one or two things that would make me feel like I made movement this month. And then just focus on those things and do those things. Anything else that comes up is a nice to do. But if you have at least one or two things that you focus your time on, it's less draining on you mentally. Once you actually complete those things and finish them, you feel better. Or even if you haven't finished them, but you're able to see the progress that you made on those like two things, you feel more in control of what you're doing. But if you're constantly like creating these really long matrixed to-do lists and goals for the month, it's exhausting. And something's going to fall off and then that affects your morale. And at the end of the day, what you want to do is pump yourself up instead of make yourself feel bad that you're not hitting all these to-dos on your list.
You nailed it. It's so funny you say that because I've been feeling that way lately about my to-do list and I've been feeling that way lately about laundry. And it's like, because it's just like, it's never ending, right? And the other thing is like the way that you do it, then you can really look back at the end of a year and be like, wow, look at the goals that I had this year and how far I've come, as opposed to like always feeling like you aren't done. And it goes back to what you're saying too about this feeling of like, or this idea of like creating moments of elevated feelings for yourself throughout the day. That's just going to really like bring up that frequency and bring that abundance to you. So I think it all like goes hand in hand.
Oh, for sure. And it's kind of like how months ago, and I haven't seen it a lot recently, but at one point this was the thing on Instagram and TikTok, like romanticize your life. And when you do that though, it's funny to say, but it's basically just finding moments of joy in your day. Like whether I'm making my matcha in the morning and that makes me feel good because I know I switch from coffee to matcha and matcha helps me to think more clearly and focus and it's better for my body. That's something that you can technically quote unquote romanticize, but it's just creating these things that instead of looking at your day as, man, I have so much work to do. It's, I have so many things I have the ability to do. I'm so grateful that I have to go to the gym. I get to go to the gym. I get to move my body. I get to do all of these things. So much of happiness in life, I think, comes from just shifting perspectives and how you think about things.
100%. Okay, that was really, I'm like beaming. I think I just like really needed someone to talk to about all of that. So thank you. But I want to get into your, because you have such an incredible marketing career. You also have incredible marketing ability, which we'll get into. I've been observing you and you're just like an expert. I wanted to ask you just as a starting question here, do you think your ability to market, did it come from like what you learned in school? Is it something that it's like you staying on top of trends, or do you feel like you've always had like a natural innate ability to generate interest in things?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. I do think some of it comes naturally. It's just, I've always been a curious person since I was younger. I was, you know, in elementary school and thinking about wanting to be in advertising and really just analyzing advertisements and why I liked certain brands and why did I think Nike and Adidas were so cool, but I wasn't really into Puma when I was growing up. They're like, what is it that made me attracted to these things? Why did I like Coke over Pepsi? And I mean, obviously Coke tastes way better in my opinion. But that aside, I've always been naturally curious about humanity and people and why we think the way we think and what affects us and like the psychology behind marketing and what we need as consumers to make us be excited about something versus one product versus another. So I think a lot of it comes to me just naturally being a curious person, but also that's how my brain works. But absolutely, having gone through university and trained in commerce, I went to Ryerson University. It's now TMU, but I was trained in marketing and communications and I had a Bachelor of Commerce. So I learned about all different facets of business from finance to accounting to economics and the impact of like the global trade, as well as marketing. All of this is just business foundations, which helped me to understand not just the marketing side of how you're positioning your brand to consumers, but also as a brand and business, how to be successful in an ever-changing and evolving world. So I think it's a combination of continuous learning and testing and experimenting, some of my traditional learning that I had in university, and then just me being a curious person and, you know, having 15 years of experience being in the marketing space definitely supports that as well.
You've had some really big jobs and we'll get into that as well. But actually I was going to ask you this. Did you feel like you saw elements of this, like now looking back as a person in your 30s, do you feel like you saw elements of this like innate marketing ability as a child? Were you aware of like brand campaigns, like that type of thing?
Oh yeah. I was really, and maybe at the time I was a kid, so I didn't really understand it, but I just remember there were certain commercials that I was like, wow, that's such a cool commercial. How did they even film that? Like when, you know, my friends would be like, oh, that's cool. I like that video or that commercial. I would be thinking, how did they film that commercial? Or like, how did they get this actor to be in it? Or how did they like write the script? I was always thinking about the behind the scenes of how things come into production and into being. And at the time I didn't realize it. I just thought, well, this is how my brain works. And I don't just look at things at face value and say, okay, that's cool. So I think that's a big part of it. And when we're talking specifically about marketing in general, there's so many different facets of marketing, right? You're using different parts of your brain, left brain, right brain. You're looking at analytics and data. You're understanding human behavior and consumer behavior. And then you're also understanding the critical elements of brand design and creative design and what you can test in market to see if a product performs well among consumer groups or not. So I think it's also, that's why I've been interested in marketing as well, is because it lets me play ping pong with left brain, right brain as I'm building for myself and for clients.
Okay. This is, I think, a good time to ask you about this. I love that, this idea of like the left and right brain. You have had some really interesting roles at some really interesting times. So most notably to me in like kind of recent years, you were digital marketing and social media manager at McDonald's. Was it McDonald's Canada?
Yeah, McDonald's Canada.
From 2014 to 2019, which I think is so interesting because 2014 to 2016, I feel like there's like a real shift in the digital marketing landscape. Mm-hmm. And so for you to have this type of role at this caliber of company is really interesting to me. Can you take us through a little bit of like what that time was like for you and kind of what that transformation to digital at that time at a company like that was like for you?
Oh, for sure. Working for McDonald's was one of the most fun jobs I've had and one of the highlights of my career when I look back at it. I was there for almost 5 years and I stayed because there was always something to do and because I liked the brand. Like I grew up eating McDonald's and I graduated from my Happy Meal to my Big Mac. I go to McDonald's with my friends after school. My first job at 15 was at McDonald's, even though I didn't last very long. It's that's, you know, it was just a part of my upbringing. And so working at McDonald's, when I got into the door at McDonald's, they didn't have a digital team. They had a marketing team and a communications team. And I joined under communications. It was a 1-year contract. And so I'm someone who likes stability and security. And so going into a 1-year contract, I was like, oh, this is kind of risky for me because I, you know, want my insurance coverage and I want this and that. And So it, to me, that was taking a risk. To someone else, it's like, whatever, it's a contract job. But for me, that was a big deal to go from having security of working at Tangerine or ING Direct to McDonald's on a contract. But it was serendipitous. When I joined, they didn't have digital, they didn't have a social media expert. And this was like, I'd say at the height of like Facebook advertising being really effective, Instagram, TikTok was definitely not a thing at the time. I think it was like Vine and other stuff that was going on. Snapchat was really big during that time. And so when I joined, within 9 months of joining, we had heard from Steve Easterbrook, which was the global CEO of McDonald's at the time, that every single market was going to go through a digital transformation. And that was music to my ears, because I remember walking in the doors of McDonald's and being like, so where's the web development team? And where's, you know, this and that? And they were like, oh, we don't have those. Like, we work with agencies. And I remember being like, what? I need to figure out like how to get landing pages on the website and how to get things up and running. And so I joined at the perfect time. I joined on the communications team and quickly pivoted to digital. And I was hire number one under my boss on the digital team. And I was there until we were, I think, like a group of 14 people. We had our own agencies working with us. And we were essentially like this little startup within McDonald's that was there to create this transformation. And we got into a lot of trouble. We had a lot of fun. We were working within this traditional organization that's so focused on operations and like excellence of operations to a T. McDonald's has to be perfect with everything they do. And so having this group of digital folks that come in and we're like, oh, we're going to create an app and we're going to have kiosks in the restaurant. We're going to do all this crazy stuff. It really flipped the script for everybody at McDonald's. It was a great experience for me. I got to work with some wonderful people, excellent leadership. And I got to create campaigns that just didn't exist before. And so allowing me to be creative in an organization that is traditionally very left-brained was amazing. I got to stir things up at the company. We got to do new campaigns. We had a McDonald's application where you could, the app still exists. It's a McDonald's app. You can get like discounts and coupons. We, with one of my campaigns, we broke the app. It stopped working because it was so popular and so many people were rushing to the restaurants to use it. It was just a great experience. And so I'd say that was one of my highlights, because not only was I there for a long period of time where I got to fully see through and basically work myself out of a job, and I didn't need to be there anymore. I could be like, here, I've done everything I can with from a digital marketing perspective. Here's the keys. You guys can take it and run with it. And that was a really great way to close my role. And that's traditionally what I've done at every company that I've been at. I've started at a place where they didn't have anything and I helped them build. And once I got it to a place where I felt like I didn't need to be there anymore, I moved on to my next role.
And now you do that independently for
my clients. Yeah. And I think that's where it worked out beautifully for me to go down the consulting realm as a fractional CMO and consultant, because I get to work with different clients. It's very exciting. I get to support them in a specific stage in their business and help them build their marketing engine and take them from zero to one. And once that work is done and I've helped them hire a team or whatever it is that they need, I see myself out. And it's exactly the same thing that I've been doing, like serendipitously, funny enough, in my career, but now I do it more short term.
That's so cool. How do you, okay, so for this podcast, a lot of the people who listen, it's really centered around like the idea of career fulfillment. And maybe that even isn't your 9 to 5. Maybe that's like you start a podcast or you start that project. And I think a lot of the people who listen to this podcast are people who are like, I know that I want to do something, but either I don't know what that is or I'm too scared to take that leap. What do you think is like, if someone is starting something from scratch, what do you think is either the first or the most important thing to start to build brand awareness, like from not knowing anything, like if something exists, to starting to build that brand awareness? Like, what's kind of the first step?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways to approach that. So it depends on specifically what you're trying to build and what you're trying to create. And do you need to go on social media, or is there another avenue for get the word out about your business or the idea that you have? So I think the first thing to do is to just critically look at your audience before you do anything. It's like, where do the people that I'm trying to reach spend their time? Are they on Instagram, or are they an older demographic on Facebook? Are they reading the newspaper instead? Are they more likely to find me through Google search? And that's really where you should start, is understanding who you're trying to create this for. Without that understanding, you'll end up doing a bunch of things, spending a lot of money, and then realizing that you've been talking to the wrong audience the whole time.
that makes sense. And how do you find that? I guess you just look to see like, I guess who, like maybe the first step is like who, like determining who you're trying to serve.
Yeah. Figure out who's your audience. If you are, let's say, creating a blog and your blog is HR specific, like you said, and it's focused on fulfillment in your career. So you have to narrow it down and be like, am I targeting everyone? Am I targeting women specifically? Am I talking to people in their 20s who are, you know, like early in their career and they're trying to figure out what they want? And then, you know, where are they spending their time? What information do they need? What's going to be more beneficial to them? And that's really how you create it. And I do the same thing with my clients is before I do anything, I'm like, who's your audience? If you don't have an audience or you don't know who you're targeting, it's really difficult to find success because how do you measure that success if you don't know who you're trying to attract?
That makes sense. And then I know I can just like Google this or look this up in a textbook, but I really want your unique perspective on this based on your experience. Mm-hmm. What do you think is that marketing life cycle from never having heard of a brand to being an engaged member of their community or potentially even like converting?
Yeah, it takes a lot of work. There's different steps. I mean, we know even in the data, it shows that I think you need to have at least like a frequency of seven to 10 times. And I think it might actually be more now because we're so inundated with noise and information where you need to hit someone at least 7 to 10 times with your brand, with what you do before they'll actually clue in and be like, oh, maybe this is for me. So I think it's that life cycle can be tremendously long sometimes, depending on what your product is and what you're trying to sell. And like, you know, is it in the government space? Are you selling to consumers? Is it B2B? You have to have all of these considerations. So there, I think that the best thing that anyone can do who's starting out, maybe you have a side hustle or you're trying to do something right now, is just a few simple things. So identify who your audience is. Do some consumer research to understand, you know, how they speak, how they want you to talk to them, what they want to see online, and then also understand where they spend their time. If your audience is on, you know, TikTok, let's say, why aren't you on TikTok? That's where you should be. If your audience does not use social media because you're selling a service that's, you know, more about like being holistic and whatever, maybe what you need to be doing is targeting newsletters. That's the approach that you should be taking. So it really just depends on what you need. And I think the life cycle is different for every product. There's certain waves that we see and it kind of like goes up like an upside down U once you hit critical mass. But it's you, in order to get there, it takes years. A lot of the founders that come on my podcast, they don't see seven-figure success until they're 6 to 7 years into their business. And I think that's a fallacy that we see online where people just assume, oh, I start something and I'm going to get rich. And it's like, no, that is very rare that that happens. Most people are grinding and working hard 9 to 5, 9 to 9, whatever it is for years before they actually see that level of success.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think consistently the successful business owners I've had on the podcast have said the exact same thing. It takes years.
Yeah.
And then, okay, one thing I feel like you are exceptionally good at, like, I think my area of expertise is more talent acquisition. And so one thing I'm really good at spotting is like, what is this person's competitive advantage in the marketplace? Mm-hmm. Like what makes them special? And when I look at you, to me, what makes you special is your ability to grow, really build and grow a very authentic, engaged community.
Thank you.
I've never seen anything like it. Like, I feel like every single one of your followers, there's not a bot in there. There's not like a, you know, it's like every yeah. single person is a human being that's like bought into your work and your mission. Like in a world that is so oversaturated, discount codes, email marketing campaigns, yeah. like all this stuff, like how do you cut through the noise and get to the people that you're wanting to get to and get them to like buy into what you're trying to do and really build that community?
I think for me, it's super easy because I created She's Interesting because it was something that I wanted. So my consumer is me. My consumer is women that are above 30 who are looking for this type of information, who are excited about the type of conversations that I'm excited about. They care about investment. They care about money. They care about their well-being. They're very much like innovative thinkers, forward thinkers, and maybe they haven't started their business yet, but they have that spark inside of them and it's something that they want to do. They may just not be prepared and that's fine. You may not be ready to do it tomorrow, but you can come to She's Interesting and see the community as something that you can be a part of and learn from and grow with. so that once you do get to that stage and you're ready to take the leap and start your business or, you know, whatever that path is for you, you feel like you're a part of something that will be there to support you. Because what I've learned is, especially when you get into your 30s, 40s, et cetera, our friendships, you may still have friends that you've had since high school or university or, you know, like your first job. But oftentimes we all start to make different decisions in life and we kind of go, it's like a split in the road. So I may be going towards the right. Some of my friends are going towards the left. And so when I'm thinking about very business-minded things that I want to focus on, some of my friends, they can't support me in that way because that's not what they're focused on. They're focused on different things. And so I want to find more people that are going in the same direction as me so that we can actually support each other because we have similar goals and ambitions in life. Not to say that you need to put aside those other friends. You still keep them and cherish those friendships. But you need to recognize that in order for you to build what you want, you also need to find a community of people that are like-minded. And that's the purpose of She's Interesting. Let's get us all together, share information, learn from each other, and continue to build.
I love that. I feel like that's exactly what you're doing. And you can see it in the engagement. Like, you know, it's like people really, you make people feel something. And I think that it's hard to get that reaction these days because there is so much on social media and you're doing an incredible job.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to take things here a little bit more personal. I'm like nervous to talk to you about this, but I also am really excited because I feel like this is probably a conversation I would have wanted to have with you privately anyway. So you and I both have podcasts. There's some crossovers. Like we're both women in our 30s. We live in Toronto. We both work at Shopify. We have a bit of like tech influence and experience.
We're wearing similar colored shirts today.
definitely wearing almost the exact same shirt, which is also funny. But the way that we show up with our podcasts is so different. And maybe it's the marketing. This is going to be the question is like, where does this come from? But you have such a way, like you show up and it's strong, but it's engaging. It's not off-putting. It's like, it's inspiring. And I really hide, like I still really hide. I'm afraid of being seen. I'm afraid of coming across braggy. Like I really kind of like do myself a disservice with the podcast because I'm too afraid to really fully put myself out there. And I think one perfect example of this is like, I didn't post about my podcast on LinkedIn at all until 4 or 5 months in. And the only reason it happened was because one of my guests who was on posted it on theirs and then they tagged me and then people in my network saw. And at that point I was like, okay, well, I guess I kind of like have to be a bit more forthcoming with this, but I was so scared of like what people might think, I guess. And then you had a totally different approach. You had this like really like inspiring, I don't know, just like, it was just kind of this post that was like, I'm doing this thing. This is who it's for. This is who it serves. Like, if you're interested, like, this is where you can find it. But it was like, it was infused with a lot of like really, I don't know, made people feel something. And that post got shared 19 times. And to me, what it showed me was like, if you're starting a project, the difference in the success it sees or the growth it sees can just truly be a matter of like how much you're willing to put yourself out there. And so I have two questions for you here. The first is, have you always had that self-confidence or is that something you had to develop?
Yeah, I think confidence is something that grows with you over time. Like the more experience you have, the more you learn to put yourself out there and expose yourself and then realize like, oh, nothing bad happened. I'm still alive. You learn from that. And I think just over time, and I've always been like this since I was a kid where I just believed in myself, even though the odds so many times were stacked up against me. I had a widowed mom. We were immigrants to Canada. Like, you know, people would assume that I would just hide in a corner or something, which I was very shy as a kid, but I had to push myself to become more of an extrovert. And so I think just throughout my life, because I've been through different adversities and I just had this unwavering belief that like, I'm going to make stuff happen for myself. I'm going to live life on my terms. And I feel good when I do these things. And I just kept following that, right? Like I'm just following what feels right to me. I don't compare myself to anybody else because comparison is the thief of joy. And it really, really is. Like my approach to how I do things comes from me and my intuition and what I've read and what I feel inside. And if I were ever to try to change that, I think that's where then I would start to feel like I'm lacking in my confidence because it's not coming from me, it's coming from somebody else. And so I think that's really when we're thinking about confidence, it's a muscle that you grow over time and you work on it. And it's not like I feel fabulous every day. There's days where I'm like, oh, I'm not really feeling my best today. Like, what can I do to raise my confidence level? What can I do to remind myself that I am a wonderful person, that I'm smart, that I'm all of these things that I feel that I am, but today I just, you know, I'm not vibing right. And so I even have a folder where I save all the positive feedback that I get, because there's, as an entrepreneur especially, there's a lot of hard days where you are not feeling your best, things are not going the right way, people are ghosting you, and you're just like, what the hell is going on? Hello, like, is this thing on? What's happening? And so I go to that folder and I'm like, let me remind myself why I'm doing this again, because I could easily just go get a corporate job right now, but I'm not. So I think that's for anybody who's listening, whether you are working in a corporation or you're, you know, off on your own, have your folder of highlights and your brag book where you save everything that your boss has said, that your peers have said about you, things that you've done that you feel good about, because that is a good reminder of, oh yeah, I can do stuff. And that reminds you to be confident. But it's, yeah, absolutely, it's a muscle.
Do your siblings have the same thing? Like, do you guys all have this level of kind of like comfort with yourselves and like have this level of confidence?
No, I think it's different for all of us. I have four sisters and we're also in different generations. My oldest sister is in her 50s. I'm in my late 30s. I have two sisters in their 50s, one in her, about to have two in their 40s, and then me, right? Like, we are very different generationally and we grew up different. My sisters grew up in Iran. I grew up in Canada. So it's, our approach to life is different. And I think also being like the youngest child and a bit of, you know, like the younger one is a little bit of a rebel sometimes. Not that I'm saying I'm a rebel. I don't think I am at all, but I just have a different attitude and approach to things. And I think I just really lean into having a growth mindset and constantly learning, because the minute you realize like no one's perfect, but what I can do is continuously learn and grow. Mm-hmm. And that's something that no one can take away from me. That's something that I own. I think that also helps my confidence. If I don't know something, I don't know it, but I can learn and that's fine.
I love that. And the second question I wanted to ask you here is, I don't know if this is like you lean into your confidence or your marketing or both, but what, just talking about kind of like showing up on social media and sharing your work on social media, how do you think you take something from feeling cringeworthy to put out to being shareworthy to put out?
Oh, that's a good question. I try to just ignore the cringe. Like, there's literally sometimes where I'm like, should I post this? And then I'm like, no, I'm going to post it. And so I don't let it stop me. There's so many, and you know what it is? I disconnect myself from the results. Ooh. And I'm not here for social media praise. I am not an influencer by any means, but I'm someone who's here to get you interested in things. And that's the whole point of She's Interesting. If I post something online and you're interested, beautiful. That content was meant for you. It was made for you to find it. If you see it and you don't like it and you keep scrolling, that's cool. I'm not offended. My content's not for everyone. And so that's what I remind myself. And I'm like, some people are going to like things I'm doing and some people are not, but that's fine, because I'm just trying to build my tribe. I'm trying to build my community. And that's the reminder that I give myself. And even if I post something that I'm like, oh, am I like, are people going to think I'm like full of myself or whatever? I'm like, no, I, the right people will be like, she's awesome. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to support her. And that's what I'm looking for.
I love that. I love the idea of removing yourself from the outcome. Cause I do think that I get very attached to like views or like engagement numbers. And then, you know, the problem with that too, is like, then you get that one or two people who are inspired, who are engaged, but you're so busy looking at like the fact that your post got 500 views that you're not looking at what's right in front of you, which is like the people who you are engaging. So I think that's like, I really am taking something away from that.
Yeah. And also think about it too. I was talking to one of my clients who's building, he's a founder and he's building his social presence. And he's like, you know, I know I only have like, you know, 100 followers or whatever. And I was like, listen, if you were in a room right now with 100 people, if you could fill that room, you would be like, wow, I'm kind of a big deal. 100 people showed up and they care what I'm thinking. Yeah. But social media just has a way of us forgetting about the people behind the numbers. And so I try to remind myself that I'm building something for people, not for numbers. And so the results to me are when people message me and they're like, that episode you did with this person, or when you talked about, you know, how to take your leap of faith, that really resonated with me. It helped me quit my job and start my business. That's like huge. That's way better. It's qualitative feedback is so much more important to me than quantitative. And also, I feel like I'm still very early in my journey with She's Interesting. So where I am today is not where I'm going to be 4 years from now. And I need to recognize that and stop trying to speed up the process. I'm all for growth at a steady pace versus accelerate and burnout.
Absolutely. And I'm really learning that, because what I'm figuring out is like what you learn in the time is the lessons you need so that when you are a little bit bigger, things are a little bit busier, you're like ready for it. Yeah. I love that. Thank you for sharing all of that. I think kind of as we get towards the end here, a couple of things I want to ask you are around, I really feel like when I witness your brand as a spectator, a lot of the ethos to me is like high performance, whether you mean for it to be or not, but really like leveling up. Yeah. I just in the spirit of that, I was curious to know if you have a morning and night routine, and if you do, what they look like.
Yeah. So definitely even a lot of the content that I put out on social, it specifically says for like high achieving women, because it's like, come on, let's all be friends and do stuff together. So in terms of a morning routine and a nighttime routine, I don't have a good one right now. I'll be totally honest. I am flying by the seat of my pants. I am in the middle of a move. Like there's stuff everywhere in my house and I'm just trying to get myself organized. But what I will say is the time where I felt the most at ease was when I had a really good evening routine, because my evening routine would then enable me to have a really strong morning. And mm-hmm. so my evening routine was that I would put away my phone. I would put away all like devices, and I did a puzzle. And the reason why that works, especially as someone like myself who has ADHD, and I'm constantly having like, it's like having multiple tabs on your Chrome window open. That's what ADHD is like. And so what it would do for me is it wouldn't be like a book where I'm consuming content. I would be by the end of the day, tired of consuming, tired of reading, tired of listening, tired of, you know, like I'm doing podcasting, I'm listening to things all day, I'm watching YouTube. And by the end of the day, if you do a puzzle or some sort of meditation, it helps you to relax your brain. You're not thinking about anything. You're just putting the pieces in place. It's helping your body to shut down. And then I would do that. I would have like a turmeric latte at home or some tea or something warm that made me feel good. I would stretch a little bit and then I would go to bed. Mm-hmm. And I would sleep so well, obviously taking magnesium, but that was my nighttime routine. And that's really what I want to, like when my life is less chaotic, like it is right now in the middle of my move, that's what I'm going to go back to, because at the end of the day, I was tired of using my brain. And when you're a high achiever, when you have ADHD, when you have so much you want to do, the last thing you need is to then consume more content as you're about to fall asleep. It's awful. I know people are like, oh, I read a book and I fall asleep. I can't. It doesn't help me shut down.
I love that idea of a puzzle, because you are thinking, but not about any, like, so it's like, cause I think if I was like meditating at night, I really think that I would just end up thinking, like overthinking, my thoughts would just crowd in there. But a puzzle, it's like, you are forced to think and like do, like you're doing an action, but you're not like thinking about work or what's next or, you know, all those things. And yeah, like the phone thing, it's so bad. Like I think like sometimes I'm like in bed and it's like midnight and I'm scrolling through my phone and it's like, here's how I made 500K in the last 2 months with affiliate marketing. And you just feel like it's like the worst, like
you're mindset like, should I be doing affiliate marketing?
Literally. Exactly. Right. And like right before bed, it's just so bad. So I love that. I think that's great. Okay. One last question before we kind of close things. Are you good for time?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. For anybody who wants to start a podcast or a project or something, and they're just at that point where they know they want to do it and they know what they want to do, but they're just afraid to like take the first step. What advice would you have for anybody who's going through that right now?
I think you just need to go. Don't think about it. 5-second rule. Like Mel Robbins says, the minute you allow yourself to overthink things, the minute you'll talk yourself out of doing anything that you want to do that brings you joy. So, and I'm not saying like go for it as in go quit your job. That's definitely, please don't quit your job. Have a plan, obviously. But don't give yourself that opportunity to doubt. If an idea comes to you, it was meant for you. And if you don't take that idea and start working on it, it'll go to someone else. That's really what I believe in. And so I think if you want to do something and it feels right to you and it's an idea that keeps coming back to you, you should just go for it. Start building, start seeing what happens. I'm not saying that once you start, it's going to be a success. It isn't always a success. But what it does is it enables you to learn things. And if you have a growth mindset and you're focused on learning in life, then go for these things, go for these opportunities, and you'll be surprised at how much it changes you as a person. And so don't let it be like, I'm doing this just because I want to be super successful in the next Elon Musk. Do these things because you're like, I want to grow as a human and I want to have a really beautiful life experience, whether it's going to turn out well or not. I mean, nobody can predict what's going to be a success or not. So just go for it.
I think that's such a great way to end this. Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's actually really important to make that point of like going into it, not thinking about the end goal being like massive, massive success. Cause I just think that's like a trap. Like it keeps you from sticking with it, because when you're not seeing the results you thought you'd see as quickly as you thought you'd see them, yeah, you end up just like wanting to quit. As opposed to like taking it as like a learning experience. I like, oh my gosh, like I would just piggyback off what you say of like starting this podcast. I just had no idea the things that have come out of it that have been so positive for me, I wouldn't have ever known before starting it. It's like, I needed to be in it to really realize the amazingness of it. And so it's like, you just don't know what can come out of it, whether like, it might not be financial success, but it might be just your network growing or having like getting to ask somebody questions that you've wanted to ask them anyway, you know, like it's just, there's so much to gain from just trying.
Yeah. You have nothing to lose. If the only thing you'll have is if you don't try, you'll just have a bunch of regrets. And people usually who have regrets, they are vibrating at a lower level, right? And they usually become unhappy in life. And so like, who wants to be that? You want to be a happy person. You want to try things. And I feel like the more you try and the more you fail, the less you care.
Because yes.
You're like, oh, well, it didn't work last time. Didn't work this time.
It's so
let's
true.
Try again. You just are less like it's less attached to your identity. It's just something that you've done. That's all. Just think about it as a series of experiments that you're doing. Same with your job, right? Like I'm sure a lot of your audience that's listening, they are working a corporate job or trying to figure out how that they can get to the next level or the next stage. And it's like, just try things. Think about your job as an experiment. Put yourself out there, bring ideas to the table, try things, try different ways of communicating with your colleagues, with leadership, how you present yourself, how you put your presentations together. There's just so much that you can experiment and try. And not all of it needs to be quitting your job. There's a lot of people that are entrepreneurs and they thrive and they do really well in these environments. So if that's what you're good at, stop trying to force being an entrepreneur. Build within, because then you have all these resources at your disposal. You just need to know how to navigate them.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's perfect. Actually, there's a girl, and do you know Courtney Johnson?
I don't think so.
She makes like really great content around like career, like how to show up on LinkedIn, how to show up on TikTok, how to like really build a personal brand. And somebody asked her like, what do you do when you post something and it doesn't perform well? And I thought she had like a perfect answer, which was like, she said, I never look at a single data point as an indication of anything. I look at like a set of 10 or 15 posts and I look at what the trends are, which ones did well, which ones didn't. And I take from that to make the next set of 10 or 15. And I think that's like such a great lesson.
I agree. I think looking at it's like looking at one isolated incident and being like, oh, this then proves I will never be successful. I'm unworthy. I'm a loser. You're like, no. It's one thing that happened to you that didn't go well, and you're letting it all tell you about your life based on an algorithm of a social app. Most of these things are because of the algorithm. It's not because the content's not good.
Yeah.
So once you recognize that, then you realize, well, I just have to keep trying until I figure out how to break through this algorithm and so that my content is better or it stands out or the algorithm starts to support the content that I'm posting. That's really it. It has nothing to do with you and it's completely external.
Yeah. And I feel like I'm like trying to tie this up, but every time you say something, I'm like, oh my gosh, there's just so much more to say. But the other thing too is like going back to kind of the beginning of this conversation around like mindset and that type of thing. Like, I think the other thing I'm really learning is like how much of life is dictated by the story you tell yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's so powerful. Like I was home recently and I was like, I don't know, it's such an incredible experience. Like I was going through my old report cards. I thought I was like a certain type of student. And then I was going through my report cards from like kindergarten, second grade. And I was like a totally different story. Mm. And going through pictures being like, oh, I thought this person kind of like didn't pay enough attention to me. And then you're going through all these pictures and like they're carrying you in every single picture. There's like so much love, you know, and you're just like, whoa, like I just created the story, but it doesn't look like that was really true. And so really like redefining that, I think, can completely change the way that you show up.
Absolutely. I think the most important thing is what you tell yourself and what you believe. You can choose to believe that you're doing your best and you're trying, or you can let that negative voice inside saying that you're never doing good enough, you're never working fast enough, you're never X, Y, and Z. And it's like, it's exhausting, right? Nobody wants to live that way. And I think anyone who's listening to this who's maybe has more perfectionist tendencies, because that's what makes you perfectionist, is always like wanting to one-up yourself and do better. It's just take things one step at a time and be kind to yourself the way you would be so kind to a colleague or your clients or your friends and family. Be a mirror of that to yourself. And I think that's just like, we're all trying our best. And sometimes, especially being in North America and this society, we take things too seriously when it comes to work and business and that kind of stuff. And not to say that they aren't serious, but I think that we don't need to attach ourselves to the outcomes as much as we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Rochelle, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you? And is there anything upcoming that the audience can keep an eye out for?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're in season two of She's Interesting. So definitely follow She's Interesting, the podcast hosted by myself, Rochelle Hariri, on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. We also have a YouTube channel that I'm starting to grow. So please go and follow that or subscribe to it. And we're also on Instagram. Instagram is where you'll get like the top content. It's just She's Interesting podcast, and the same over at TikTok. TikTok, I do a little bit more like behind the scenes of who I am as a person, but that's generally where you can find us. And there's so much really, really exciting stuff that's coming out of She's Interesting over the next few months. So definitely tune in, because you guys are just going to be so surprised by where we take things. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. I feel like you do everything like to the absolute best. So I can't imagine. And I'm so excited to see. And Rochelle, thank you so much. Honestly, like this could have gone a totally different way, having two people like do a very similar thing with a very kind of similar overlapping audience. And it's just been so nice to have you as someone to call if I need support, or like, it's just been a really nice friendship to grow out of this. So thank you for being here, and thank you for like being that person for me.
Of course. I'm happy to. And thank you for your support as well and bringing me on your podcast. It's so nice of you to, and it's cool that we get to spend this time together and talk about these things that, you know, I'm talking about on a regular basis. And I think my husband's like, oh, here she goes again. But it's nice to talk to like-minded people. So I appreciate it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Land a Job You Love podcast. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. If you're interested in learning more about career coaching services with me, you can visit the link in my bio on Instagram at Spark Career Co. I hope you have a great day.